Hi, everybody. Welcome to the libraries. It's really exciting to see such a great crowd because I know there are so many fun things going on campus with the Science Festival, so welcome. My name is Teresa. We've got folks from the Organization for Bat Conservation here today to tell you all about bats and how cool they are. Downstairs on the third floor is an exhibit about library resources related to bats, so if you have time and you want to make that a stop on your visit to the library, please do. I'm going to introduce Eric, who will introduce our guest speaker. Eric is our environmental studies librarian, and he has a LibGuide online that will also give you information about resources in the libraries about bats. So again, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. And it is my pleasure to be able to introduce Dawn Vesna as your presenter today. She is the education specialist with the Organization for Bat Conservation out at the Cranbrook Institute in Bloomfield Hills. So she drove out here this morning to present to you, and she brought along four of her very best furry winged friends. And so without any further ado, please join me in welcoming Dawn today. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody. It's really great to be here today and to see such an amazing turnout. You know, and today is actually a fun day, and I'm glad that they provided those cool stickers for us today. You know, yesterday was just Bat Appreciation Day, too, so this is like perfect timing. So it's nice to see all you folks coming out here interested in bats. What we're going to do here today is learn about bats from all around the world and the beneficial roles that they provide. We're going to find out that bats actually do some very important things around the world, and we actually need these animals on the planet for various reasons. So we're going to start out by learning more about bats through a PowerPoint presentation that I have here for you, and then we're going to get to meet the live bats. I have the live bats resting over here in these cases. And I brought four different species of bats from three different continents today. So we're really going to get a nice sample of bats from around the world. But I'd like to go ahead and we'll get started here with the PowerPoint presentation, and we'll be meeting the live bats shortly. So around the world, there are many different species of bats. As a matter of fact, there's over 1,300 different types of bats found around the world. They're the second largest group of mammals on the planet, second only to the rodent family. Bats are very diverse. They can be found in every type of environment except for on Antarctica. They can be found on every continent except for Antarctica. They live in desert regions. They live in tropical regions, just not where it's icy all year long. As a matter of fact, there's even bats that live in Alaska. So you can find bats just about anywhere. Bats are the only mammals that can truly fly. They're in their own group called Chiroptera, which means hand wing, and bats' wings are essentially the same as our hand. They have a thumb and four fingers on each of their wings. Their fingers are just really long, and they have skin stretching between them. Now, we need bats, and bats need us. We need bats for the many services that they provide, and they need us because right now, bat populations are struggling. Bats definitely help to keep the balance of nature, and without them, things can really go downhill quick. So let's talk about why we need bats, what services these bats are providing for us that helps them to be so important to us. Our backyard bats here in Michigan are insect eaters, and they can actually eat up to their entire body weight in insects nightly, which could equal about 3,000 insects in a single night. And not only are they eating pesky insects like mosquitoes, but they're also eating moths and beetles, which can attack our farmers' crops. So these bats are very beneficial in protecting our food source from insect pests as well. They help to eat the insect pests that would attack our crops, like tomatoes, apples, and corn. So these animals, as I mentioned, are very important in helping to keep our food safe. This is a really cool video clip. Here we've slowed down, or played in slow motion, the bats hunting for insects at night. We've also kind of lowered the frequency of the bats' echolocation calls so we can actually hear them as they're using their echolocation. You may notice, too, that when the bats are hunting their insects, they often scoop the insect up in their wings, sometimes then transfer them to their tails, and then while in air, they'll dip their heads into their tail and grab the insect out of it. It's a really cool video and a very rare glimpse at actually seeing bats hunting. All right, very cool. Let's move on.
This is an injured
Here's
bat.
Another
the Organization
video clip.
For Bat Conservation, we get a lot of injured bats.
This is a live. Can you see this okay? This is a live mealworm. Do you want that mealworm? Oh!
There we go.
Oh.
Bats have huge appetites, and they are always ready to eat.
Wow. That is really adorable.
That's our director, Rob Myers. He often makes TV appearances on local TV shows, or national, I should say. Bats are also very important pollinators. We don't often realize how important bats are as pollinators, but just like bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds, bats are responsible for pollinating a variety of flowers. They can often be found, or nectar-feeding bats are often found in either desert regions or in tropical rainforest. Here in the United States, we have three species of bats that feed on nectar, and all three species of nectar-feeding bats are found in the desert areas out west, where they're very important pollinators for the cacti that grow there. Some plants depend on bats for pollination, and some plants would disappear if bats were to disappear. Bats also help to pollinate flowers that will produce a variety of fruits that we enjoy. They'll pollinate mangoes, avocados, and bananas. So they even help us to get a nice variety of fruit that we often enjoy. Fruit-eating bats are also very important. These fruit-eating bats, as they're eating fruit, they're also collecting seeds, and as they fly through the rainforest, they're dropping seeds, helping new trees to grow. Some trees that bats help to disperse seeds for, nut trees, pineapple, and figs. So these bats are very important in dispersing some of these important trees. And of course, once a rainforest has been cut down, bats are the main animals that help it grow back. Scientists have found when forests start to regrow that a lot of the first plants that come into the new area are plants that are often dispersed by bats. So we believe that bats are some of the main animals that help these rainforest patches to regrow once they've been cut down. And of course, the rainforest is important because we get medicine from the rainforest. Rainforest trees provide lots of oxygen for us. And we also get food like fruit and things from the rainforest as well. Now, humans are starting to throw off the balance of nature as we often do things that can be a little destructive to our environment. Our habitat is vanishing as we're clearing forests down to build new subdivisions or perhaps malls. We also cause pollution and pesticides while we're spraying our crops. And there's a new threat to bats these days, and this is called the white-nose syndrome. Has anybody here heard of the white-nose syndrome? A few of you have? Okay, it looks like quite a few of you have. Well, the white-nose syndrome is an introduced fungus. This is a fungus that we believe came from Europe. And we believe that humans probably brought it here accidentally, perhaps exploring caves in Europe and then coming to the United States and visiting New York, which was where the first case of white-nose syndrome was detected. So we believe that somebody probably brought the spores of the fungus on the treads of their shoes as they were exploring in Europe and then came here to the United States and explored a cave in New York. The white-nose syndrome affects bats when they're hibernating. So it's only found and only active during the hibernation season. And what happens is this fungus starts to grow on the bat's nose and on their wings while they're hibernating. And the fungus does not allow the bats to go into proper hibernation. So the bats end up running through their fat reserves too quickly, and then they starve before spring arrives. It's a pretty devastating disease. We believe we've probably lost about 6 million bats since it was first discovered about 7 years ago, and it is now spread to half of the United States, and it's even in Canada as well. Now, even though bats are facing these serious threats, there are some things that we can do to help save them. Putting up bat houses is a great way to help bats. Bat houses provide new habitat for bats, and it also provides them a safe place to raise their young so that they can help recover from their losses due to the white-nose syndrome. You can also plant a wildflower garden. By gardening with native wildflowers, we'll attract native pollinators. And not only the beautiful butterflies during the day, but these flowers often attract insects like moths by night. And of course, moths and beetles will provide food for the bats. So planting native wildflowers helps to attract native pollinators, not just the daytime ones that we appreciate, but also pollinators at night, which the bats can use as a food source. Also, we also recommend you gardening organically and avoiding harmful pesticides. You can also help bats by helping to protect wild places. And you can help protect wild places by visiting local parks and nature centers. By visiting these natural areas, you show your community that you value them, and then your community is more likely to protect them for you. So get outside and visit those wild places. Places that already have good bat habitat included. The more we visit them, the more our community realizes their value to us. And of course, one thing you can all do is teach your friends and family. And I'd like to thank the library for inviting us here to allow me to teach all of you about the importance of bats. But our message can be even stronger if all of you went home and told one other person something positive about bats that you learned here today. We can really spread the word quickly and make a bigger impact. The more people that realize that bats are beneficial, the more people will start to protect them and perhaps even put up bat houses in their own yards. Oh, here's a cool video on how some of the cast and crew from the Batman versus Superman video.
Hi, I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to talk to you about one of my favorite species of animals, the bat.
We're at the Bat Zone at Cranbrook Institute of Science, headquarters of the Organization for Bat Conservation. We are in one of our enclosures, checking out some of the biggest bats and some of the smallest bats that are here at the Bat Zone.
Bats keep the planet healthy.
Bats eat millions of bugs every night.
Because bats eat bugs, farmers can use less pesticide on their food.
This really big bat right here is Tom, and Tom is a Malayan flying fox. It's the largest bat species in the entire world. The little bat is called an evening bat. One of the biggest problems in North America is that insect-eating bats are dying because of a fungus. And unfortunately, it grows on bats while they hibernate during the winter.
Millions of bats are dying each year.
So far, a disease called white-nose syndrome has killed about 6 million bats in North America.
Essentially, these bats are on the verge of completely dying out. Not only would we lose an extraordinary species, the death of our bats would be catastrophic to our ecosystem.
There was just this little blurb in the news I saw about bats getting this thing called white-nose fungus. I think that we all just take for granted that there's bats and bats are going to be fine. But then as we started doing the research, we actually found that the bats are in dire straits, actually. As a movie that benefits from the bats, we thought we're going to build these bat habitats as a way to raise awareness and just generally let's learn about bats and know how they benefit us, because they're really important.
Bat houses give healthy bats a safe place to raise their babies.
And that gives bats a fighting chance to repopulate.
Plus, putting up a bat house is a fun thing to do with kids. Hashtag save the bats.
So I'm glad you got to see that little video. We were very, very impressed with, you know, the movie Batman versus Superman was filmed in Pontiac, or yeah, I think it was, yeah, Pontiac. So it was local, and we invited the cast and crew to come down and visit the Bat Zone, and we were very ecstatic that Ben Affleck was willing to do this video here to help promote awareness about bats. And they also took pieces from the set when they were done shooting the film. And as you saw, they were building bat houses. All those bat houses were built with scrap wood from the set from the filming of Batman versus Superman. So it was a really great way to get involved with bat conservation and tying it into the movie. So we were really lucky to have that opportunity. And I think they put together a really nice video. So I'm glad you all got to see that. But now we're done with the video part of the program, and we're going to get ready to meet the live bats. As much as I love Ben Affleck, I can't wait to show you the live bats. Okay. Now, I'm going to bring some live bats around so everybody can see. But I do have a couple of things that I would like to ask of everyone. You know, this is a great big audience, and that's wonderful. I'm glad to have so many people here, but, you know, our animals do get a little bit nervous when there's a lot of people around. If we stay nice and quiet like we are now, they feel pretty safe and comfortable. So staying quiet while the animals are out is very helpful to us and the animals, and it will allow me to keep them out longer because I would like to try to walk them down this center aisle here as well. So if we're able to make a space down the center here, I'll be able to bring them back a little bit farther to show more people. All right. So if you do have cameras too, you're welcome to take photos. I do ask if you can turn the flash off, and if you and just keep your cameras closer to yourselves and not stretch them out towards the animals. I can't guarantee the bats are going to pose for every camera, but you're welcome to take your best shots. Okay. Of course, also I need to mention that you're not allowed to touch any of the animals today. These animals are considered to be wild animals, and I would never recommend you try touching wild animals on your own. So I've been trained to handle wild animals, and I always wear protective gloves, so I'll be the only person allowed to touch today. All right? So we're going to get ready to meet our first bat. The first bat that I have today is Charlie for you to meet. And Charlie is a local bat. He's called the big brown bat, and it's the second largest of the 9 species found here in Michigan. So you're about to see one of the biggest bats you'll find in your neighborhood. And here he is, the big brown bat. Now, around the world, as I mentioned, there are over 1,300 different species of bats found around the world. And we break them up into 2 main groups to help us keep them organized. We have microbats and megabats. This is a microbat. Microbats are usually small bats. They have small eyes and big ears. Microbats can be found on every continent except for Antarctica, and microbats can eat a wide variety of foods. Most microbats are insect eaters. Some microbats will eat fruit. Some microbats will even eat small animals like frogs, lizards, birds, and mice. There's even the fisherman bat who can actually catch fish right out of the water. Now, as I'm bringing Charlie around, too, some of you might notice him moving his mouth. If you see him moving his mouth, he's actually using his high-frequency echolocation. Our ears are unable to hear echolocation. It's too high of a frequency for us. But the bats can hear it so well that they can even hear the sound waves as they bounce off objects and go back to the bat's ears, giving them a picture in their head of exactly where the insect is located. A bat's echolocation is so good, they can even detect little tiny mosquitoes flying around in our big, dark, open night sky. Now, and these little guys are good at eating mosquitoes and other pesky insects. This bat right here, he could eat about 3,000 insects in a single night. They can actually eat up to their entire body weight in insects nightly. So they're very good little bug zappers, for sure. As a matter of fact, quite often people like to put up bat houses so that they can attract these animals to their homes to eat those pesky bugs. And after I'm done showing him, I'm going to show you a bat house as well and tell you a little bit more about bat houses. And by these bats eating pesky insects, not only mosquitoes, but they're also eating moths and beetles that attack our farmers' crops. They actually help save our farmers billions of dollars annually in the reduced cost of pesticides. Now, I also have with me here a device called a bat detector. And this bat detector can actually translate the high-frequency echolocation calls of this bat, and it's going to turn it into a sound that we should be able to hear. So on the way back, as I come back down the center there, we're going to get to hear what this bat's been saying the whole time he's been coming back this way. So let's just show a few more friends back here. See, I mean, it's really echolocating too. All right, very good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and turn my bat detector on now too so we can hear his echolocation. Now, when I first turn my device on, sometimes it makes a staticky noise. All right, but when she starts, or he starts echolocating, we're going to hear clicks, or kind of like popcorn popping or tap dancing. So these clicking sounds that you're hearing now, these are the sounds that he was actually making while I was walking back this way as well, but our ears are just unable to hear it unless we have the help of this bat detector. This bat detector allows researchers to study bats. Some researchers can even detect or can determine the species of bats that are feeding by listening to the pattern and the frequency that these bats are using. And of course, you know, people always ask me, what's he saying right now? And he's not really saying anything. He's collecting information. He's trying to figure out where everybody's sitting. He's trying to figure out if there's an open door he could escape through. He might even be a little hungry and wondering if there's any insects flying around in here. Well, I'm sure he's hungry. Bats are always hungry. Eating 3,000 insects in a single night, you gotta know they're eating almost constantly while they're awake. They can eat almost their entire body weight in insects nightly. That'd be like eating a stack of apples as tall as we are. He sure has a lot to say. All right, very good. All right, would you maybe be able to slide your chair back over a little bit? Thank you. All right, very good. Yep, he's using his mouth to make the sound. All right, now he's getting pretty wiggly here. That's a good time to go ahead and put him back to bed. So I am going to go ahead and put little Charlie back to bed here, and so we can move on to another bat. But first, I do want to tell you a little bit about bat houses. Bat houses are a very important tool when it comes to bat conservation or helping to save bats. This is something that anybody could put up in their yard to provide a safe habitat for bats. And of course, one of the problems facing bats today is habitat loss. They're losing their homes. So putting up these bat houses can help to replace their lost habitat. Now, bat houses do work best when they're placed about 15 feet off the ground. They should be in a nice sunny spot where they get about 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight because they like it to be warm inside. So we want them to get lots of sunlight to keep it nice and warm. As a matter of fact, we often recommend facing them south or southeast so that they get morning sun or sun all day long across that southern sky. And we even recommend painting them a dark color to absorb more heat. They actually want it to be between 93 and 96 degrees inside of this bat house, keeping it nice and warm for their babies. Bat houses also work best when they're placed on a pole or the side of a building. So those are good places to set up a bat house. All right. We're going to move on now to a South American bat. So as I mentioned, there are two groups of bats, the microbats and megabats. And so I've got another microbat for you to meet, but this one is from South America, and she is a fruit-eating microbat. As a matter of fact, she's called the Jamaican leaf-nosed bat. And as I start to bring her around, I do want you to notice her funny-looking nose. All right, let me just get her in a good position here. There we go. All right, so this is another microbat. She is a little bit larger than our big brown bat. As a matter of fact, this bat here, she's probably pretty similar to the size of the largest bat found in Michigan, which is the hoary bat. The hoary bat is not a very common species of bat. It's a solitary species. A lot of our more common species, like the big brown and the little brown, live in groups. But this bat here is from South America, and she's called a leaf-nosed bat. And hopefully you'll notice her funny-looking nose. Now, that funny-looking nose that she has actually serves a very important purpose for her. Leaf-nosed bats actually make their echolocation calls through their nose. Now, when I brought Charlie around, some of you may have noticed him kind of moving his mouth as he was echolocating. When Bella here, when she echolocates, her nose kind of wiggles and twitches because she's pushing the sound waves out through that leaf nose of hers. Now, of course, microbats do have small eyes, but they are not blind. They just don't see as well as other nocturnal animals do with those big eyes. Would you mind scooching your chair back just a little bit? I just need a little bit of a bigger aisle way here. Very good. Now, you know, in the rainforest of Central and South America, where this bat can be found, you'll find a variety of bats. Of course, you'll have fruit eaters like this one. Insect-eating bats are always around. And you'll even find in the rainforest of Central and South America the vampire bat. And of course, the vampire bat is probably responsible for giving most bats a bad reputation. Vampire bats do feed solely on blood. But you should also know that vampire bats are only about the size of this bat here. So vampire bats are not very big. And while they do feed solely on blood, vampire bats prefer to feed off animals like cows and chickens. The vampire bat will fly and land a little ways away from a sleeping cow, and then very quietly, it will tiptoe over to the sleeping cow. It'll make a tiny cut in the cow's ankle and drink, whoops, hi honey. Yep, you gotta kinda stay in a place. If we move around too much, it makes the animals very nervous. But the vampire bat will make a tiny cut in the cow's ankle, drink only about a tablespoon of blood, and then it flies away. So the cow is not totally drained of blood. And of course, the cow doesn't turn into a vampire cow the next day. The cow wakes up in the morning and probably never even noticed the vampire bat was there. So even vampire bats are really nothing for us to be afraid of. But of course, this is not a vampire bat. I don't want you all to think she's a vampire bat. But I do like talking about vampire bats because a lot of people have fear because of the vampire bats. And also, you should know that vampire bats are only found in Central and South America. So there are no blood-feeding bats here in the United States. And of course, fruit-eating bats like this one here are very important in spreading rainforest seeds. And also, some of these bats will be drinking nectar as well and helping with pollination. Now, too, I don't know if everybody could notice, too, but as I was bringing her around, too, she has a little claw that's kind of hanging off of her wing here. The little claw, if you notice it, is actually her thumb. Bats have a thumb and four fingers on each of their wings. So this little claw over here is the thumb. Yep, we just have to make sure we keep some space, okay? Because she does get a little bit nervous. She's much smaller than we are. All right, so I'm going to bring her back around, and I'm going to kind of point out this thumb on the way back, this little claw down here. As a matter of fact, maybe I'll show you guys a wing, too. I'll kind of do it back here, and then I'll come into the center and do it again, and I'll do it again up at the front. All right, so I'm going to see if I can gently open up one of these wings here. So her little thumb is on top. That little claw on top is her thumb. All right, very good. I'm going to bring her over this way. She's being pretty patient, so I'm going to take advantage of this and keep this wing open and keep moving here. But her little thumb is on top. That little claw hanging off the top of her wing, that's her thumb. Okay. Very good. I'm surprised she's being so patient, so I'm going to keep on going here with this. All right, very good. So again, the bat's wing is made up of a thumb and four long, skinny fingers. All right, very good. Almost back up here towards the front. Okay, so hopefully everybody's getting a look at that bat's thumb, that little claw on top, and those fingers running through. Very good. All right, Bella, thank you so much. She let me show everybody that thumb. Very good. And then she says, we're done. She got all the way up to the front, and then she started tugging on her wing again. She's like, we're done. Everybody's seen it. All right, very good. All right, so far we've met two microbats, one from North America and one from South America. One was an insect eater and one was a fruit eater. And now we're going to get ready to meet a few megabats. I have two megabats today. Now, a couple things that I would like to mention, too. The megabats have larger eyes, and they're very more alert and very more aware of what's going on around them. So it's going to be more important, too, that people kind of stay in one place. Please try not to walk towards me. If there's kids who want to get towards the aisle, you know, maybe have them get there already. But when we start moving towards me, the animals are like, whoa, what are you doing? Are you trying to catch me? So it's very important that we do try to stay still when the animals are coming through. So the next bat we're going to meet, he's actually one of my favorite bats to work. He is my favorite bat to work with. His name is Bart, and he is called an Egyptian fruit bat. And I've been working with Bart since he was about 2 weeks old, and he is now, he just turned 12 at the beginning of this month, 12 years old, not weeks old. So Bart and I have been doing these programs for many, many years together. So I always love working with him. And for you little ones out here too, he looks a lot like a very famous bat from a story. Has anybody here ever read the story Stella Luna? Oh, if you like Stella Luna, I think you'll like Bart, because he looks just like her. And here he is. Oh, isn't he adorable? So this is Bart, the Egyptian fruit bat. Look at that adorable face. No wonder Janelle Cannon, the author of Stella Luna, chose a bat like this to make a part of her story. So this is what we call a megabat. Now this is considered to be a small megabat, though. The largest species of bat in the world is called the Malayan flying fox, and that bat can have up to a 6 foot wingspan. Its body can hang 2 feet from nose to toes. So the Malayan flying fox is a much bigger bat than this bat here. But we know that this guy is a megabat, and it's not just because of the size that we classify megabats as megabats, but because of their facial features as well. As you'll notice, megabats have large eyes. They can see 3 times better than people, and they see in color. Megabats also have long, dog-like noses. These long noses give them a very good sense of smell. Megabats can even smell ripe fruit from up to a mile away. Megabats are not found all around the world, though. You will only find megabats in the Old World tropical rainforests, like in Africa, Australia, and Southeast Asia. So there are no megabats in North or South America. And of course, megabats are all fruit eaters. They only eat fruit, so they're only found in the tropical rainforests where there's plenty of fruit, though of course they will drink a little nectar from flowers as well. Now, you know, and also some people are curious how our animals come to us, you know, at the bat zone. Quite often, our animals are born in captivity. Most of them come from zoos or other zoo-like facilities. Sometimes zoos get overcrowded and they need to find new homes for some of their bats. Sometimes bats will have special needs and they'll need specialized care. Sometimes we'll get those bats. As a matter of fact, we have one bat at the bat zone. We actually have 3 Malayan flying foxes, but we have one Malayan flying fox called Camilla. And she came to us because not only did she have a permanent wing injury where she can no longer fly, but she also has really bad allergies. And she gets allergy attacks a couple times a year, and her eyes will get red and puffy. Her nose will get runny, she'll start sneezing, and we give her children's Benadryl, and then she feels better. As a matter of fact, she'll even come right over and take it willingly out of the medicine dropper. I think she knows it makes her feel good. It says it's bubblegum flavored, but you know, they never really taste like bubblegum. You have a question? What does it sound like when a bat sneezes? Well, it kind of sounds like a person sneeze almost, or if you've ever heard a dog sneeze before. It actually does sound very similar to the way people sneeze. But yep, she'll sneeze, she gets runny nose, but that children's Benadryl fixes her right up. But because we have to check on her daily, you know, to see if she's having an allergy attack or not, some larger zoos just don't have the time or the capability of checking on them daily, making sure that they're getting their medicine if they need it. We do have a few bats, like Charlie, for example. Our big brown bat did come from the wild. He was orphaned. Our native species of bats don't breed in captivity. So we don't have them in zoos very often at all. So we often get ours that are rescues from the wild, where either they've been permanently injured or they were orphaned as a baby. And of course, baby bats learn a lot from their mothers. They learn where to go for hibernation. They know where to go to find food. So it's hard for us to train a bat to be a bat living in the wild. You know, and I forgot I was going to show you guys Bart's wing, too. So I'm going to make a quick little step back here for a second, and then I'll come back and show you guys. But I want to show the folks back here Bart's wing for a second. So I'm going to come all the way back here, and I'm going to kind of, I'll now work my way back around. So I forgot this in the beginning. But let me show you his big, beautiful wing. It's usually easier to see the hand in this bat's wing. Megabat's wings are a little bit different than microbat's. Their first two fingers are a little bit more separate. He says, give me that wing back. So we're going to come up here. We'll do it again over here. All right, Bart, got a few more times. I know he's like, we were already back here. What are we doing back here? All right, honey, just a second. There we go. What purpose does the thumb serve? They actually use those thumbs like hands. They'll grab fruit with those thumbs and pull it closer towards them. They'll use them to help them climb on tree branches. They'll use them to kind of box with each other when they're fighting over food or territory. Their thumbs are essentially used just like hands. As a matter of fact, the leaf-nosed bat, who we met earlier, they'll often take a nice piece of fruit, carry it in their mouths to their roost where they live, and then they'll hold on to the fruit with their two thumbs, and then they'll just take bites out of it like we would eating an apple. They're really cute in their cages when they all got a piece of fruit and they're holding on to it with their thumbs. It's pretty cute. All right, I'm going to come back up here, and we'll do it again over here. All right, Bart, we're going to show this big, beautiful wing again. All right, so hopefully you can see that hand in there. All right, very good. I know, Bart, we're almost done. All right, we're going to get him back up to the front here, and we'll do it one more time. Just one more time, I promise. All right. Okay, so we'll do it one more time, Bart. This is the last time today. All right. All right, very good. Good job, Bart. All done. Back you go. Good job. All right, so I have one more bat for you to meet. It's another bat from Africa, though this is Jasmine, and she's called a straw-colored fruit bat, and she's a little bit larger than Bart, still considered to be medium to small as far as megabats go, but she's the biggest bat I brought today, and she's one of the largest species found on the continent of Africa. So she is a pretty big girl. And in captivity, she's a really big girl. let me go ahead and get Jasmine out for you to see. Come here, Jazz. Right. All right, come here, you. All right, here I got a little bit of tissue here because our bats are not potty trained, just so you guys know. And some of the bats are better than others with controlling their bladders, but Jasmine is what I refer to as a peer. So she will sometimes pee. So I usually keep a little bit of tissue in my hand to try to catch some of that. But this is Jasmine, the straw-colored fruit bat. Now, you'll notice, too, as I bring her around, she's probably going to be kind of looking around at you, too. These bats are very curious. They have large eyes, and they're definitely aware of what's going on around them. And these straw-colored fruit bats, well, Bart is my absolute favorite individual bat. I love working with Bart because I've known him since he was a baby. Well, I've known Jasmine since she was a baby, too. But Jasmine's a little bit younger. I haven't known her quite as long. Well, Jasmine's about 7, so I've known Bart longer. But Jasmine's a really good girl, too. But the straw-colored fruit bats are so much fun because they are so curious. You know, we put things in their enclosures. We call it enrichment, where we're kind of giving them some things to do, something fun to do, something new in their enclosures. And these straw-colored fruit bats are all over anything new that goes into their enclosures. And there's one story that always comes to mind. People are always asking me how smart bats are. Well, nobody's ever done like a clinical intelligence test on these animals. But I've seen them where we would take a piece of romaine lettuce, like we're actually a head of romaine lettuce, one of their favorite snacks, and we've put it on a chain, a plastic chain, and we hung it from the top of their cage, hung it down about this far, and then put the lettuce down at the bottom. Now, these bigger bats, they prefer not to fly if they don't have to. They prefer to just climb around to get to their food. And so we watched to see how these bats would figure out how to get the lettuce off the bottom of that chain. Well, I watched three straw-colored fruit bats. You gotta stay here, girl. See how she uses those thumbs? She's trying to climb on me. But I watched the three straw-colored fruit bats come over to the chain, and they noticed the lettuce at the bottom. And the first one crawled down the chain. He just climbed right down the chain, and he's hanging there on the bottom of the chain eating the lettuce. Well, the second bat used his thumbs to pull the chain up. So he's pulling the chain up with the lettuce on the bottom and the first bat still hanging on the bottom as well. And the third bat is just kind of standing there. Well, not standing there, he's hanging there next to the second bat reeling in the lettuce. And the third bat, who did absolutely nothing, once the second bat got the lettuce up to the top, the third bat was the first one to grab a piece of it. So it was really interesting to see that all three bats got lettuce, but in three different ways. They all took their own approach. Yep, and if you kids could kind of step back a little bit, I could bring her a little bit closer over here. All right. We just have to make sure Jasmine has some space. She gets a little bit nervous if she feels crowded, okay?
Do bats make adjustments in their vision for seeing everything upside down, or is that the way they see the world?
Well, you know, I think they see their world like that, and they would probably need to, because when they're roosting, they're upside down, but when they're flying, they're right side up. So they probably need to know if they're upside down or right side up so they know which way to go. So we don't really know that for sure, too. There's a lot of things as far as how things work with bats that we don't really know. They're one of the most recently studied species of animals because of their nocturnal behavior. We didn't really have technology that allowed us to study them. So there's still a lot of unknowns when it comes to bats. All right. What's that? They nurse them with milk. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're mammals. So they nurse them with milk, just like other mammals do. All right, and as I bring Jasmine back around to the front here, I just want to again, you know, kind of go over some of the importance of bats and remind everybody the great beneficial things that these animals do around the world, like dispersing rainforest seeds that these fruit bats do for us. Even though we don't live in the rainforest is still important to us. We get medicine from the rainforest, we get fruit, and we get oxygen even from the trees in the rainforest. Some bats pollinate flowers and help to produce fruits that we enjoy, like bananas and avocados. Some plants depend on bats for pollination. Some bats, of course, like the bats here in the United States and in Michigan, are insect eaters, controlling insect pests. Not only mosquitoes that bother people, but also agricultural pests or insects that would attack our farmers' crops. As a matter of fact, these insect-eating bats that we have in the United States save our farmers billions of dollars annually in the cost of pesticides, or the reduction in the cost of pesticides. So, of course, in the less pesticides the farmers are spraying, not only does that mean cheaper produce for us, but it also means healthier produce and healthier environment as well. Because pesticides, though they do help us to protect our food, they're really not good for anybody. Now, I don't know, I know this is a pretty crowded room here. I don't know if everybody's gonna be able to see this, but I really love doing this. These straw-colored fruit bats, they will use their thumbs to open the door to their crate to get back in. So I'm not sure if you're all gonna be able to see this or not, but we'll let Jasmine, hang on, Jasmine, not yet. Let go of my shirt. All right, so we're gonna let Jasmine open up the door to her crate to let herself in. There she goes. And you know, we didn't have to train her to do that. That's a natural behavior for her. Just like we use our hands to open a door, when we want to go through it, she uses her thumb to swing it open and go right in. All right, everyone. Well, it does wrap up the end of our formal presentation, but I do have a few minutes to answer some questions. So if you are going to head out, I'd like to say thank you so much. Or do you want to make an announcement?
Sure.
Yep. I see. Okay, that's great. So you're going to follow around and get those questions. All right. Well, I just want to also say thank you. If anybody's going to leave before the questions and answers, thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget to spread the good word. You know, even if you just tell one person something good today, okay? Even if you just say, I saw bats today and they were cute, that is still a positive thing to say. So I appreciate that as well. All right, so now we'll open it up and we'll see if anybody has questions, and I'll let you go pick the people with your
microphone. We have one back here.
Okay, great. We've got a question back there.
Mm-hmm. How long do these bats live?
How long do the bats live? Well, each species will have its own lifespan. Our straw-colored fruit bats in captivity can live to be about 25. The Egyptian fruit bat like Bart in captivity about 15 years. And the Jamaican leaf-nose bats can live about 10 years. And the big brown bats about 6 to 10 years in captivity as well.
How many bats can live in that bat house?
How many bats can live in that bat house? Excellent question. Our single-celled bat house like that right there can hold up to 100 bats. They're also family members. They like to live in family groups.
What's the incidence of rabies in typical bat populations? Because I heard that that was a myth.
Well, definitely bats can get rabies, and it's, I guess it's hard to say that it's a myth, but a lot of the statistics that we hear are not actual, or let me put it this way. So when healthy populations of bats are tested, less than 0.5% test positive for rabies. But when you say, like if Michigan comes out and says that we found 60% of the bats tested had rabies, the difference is that the bats that are submitted for testing are bats that are high risk anyways. So the bats that are submitted are not healthy bats flying around. They're bats people found on the ground or in unlikely places, which could be more likely that they do have a disease like rabies. So when they say 60% of the bats we tested positive, you're testing the high risk population, not healthy population. So I wouldn't say that's necessarily a myth. It's just not very well communicated properly, I guess. Yep. Mm-hmm. Good question. How many more bats are there in the world? Well, there's 1,300 different kinds of bats around the world. So many, there's a lot. We don't know what the population of bats are around the world. There's just too many to count, and they're so hard to find, so we don't often know exactly how many bats there are around the world. Good question, though.
How closely can you space the bat houses, or how many? What's the density for distribution? Mm-hmm. Typically.
Well, you know, there's not really any density distribution for the bats because they can often live close together. So you can even put bat houses back to back. They're usually like the more the merrier. You know, they like to live with other bats. So I always tell people when they're like, well, I want to put bat houses in my yard, you know, how far do they have to be apart? I say, don't worry about the distance between the bat houses. Be more concerned about the good place that you're putting it in, making sure it's getting 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight, that it's in an open area where the bats can see it easily. So don't be so concerned about how close they are. Just look for good spots and put a bat house in every good spot you can find. All right, any other questions? Mm-hmm.
How did you find the very big one?
How did we get Jasmine?
Yeah, was it like in the ground?
No. Well, Jasmine actually, she was born at the bat zone, and her mother came to us from a zoo. So all of the bats from tropical parts of the world, they all have lived in captivity or in zoos their whole lives. Charlie, on the other hand, the big brown bat, he was orphaned, but he came to us from a wildlife rehabilitator in Oklahoma. So he was found, and I don't know, he may have been found on the ground. He was found as a baby bat that lost his mom. Thank you. Good question. All right, I think we have a question over here. If somebody wants to hand her the microphone.
What kind of bat do you think Batman is?
What kind of bat do I think Batman is? A super bat. Okay. I would have to say a Malayan flying fox with that big wingspan. Good question. All right, do we have any other questions?
Just want to thank everybody again for coming, and I know we've pressed your schedule for the Science Festival today, but I appreciate you sticking around and asking lots of questions. We have in the special collections one of the largest comic book collections in the world. and so you can find everything you need to know about Batman. And downstairs, I'll just remind people about our exhibit about bats for more factual kinds of information. You can check out Eric's LibGuide. It's an electronic list of all of the resources that you can find in the library as well. Thank you again for coming. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed my time here.